Welcome to tonight's council meeting. We just returned from a closed session dealing with labor negotiations. I'll ask our city attorney to report if there's any reportable items.
There is no reportable action.
Thank you, which means we have taken no action, just discussion at this point. We'll now go ahead with our regular session and call the meeting to order. And before we do our Pledge of Allegiance, I do want to mention some more sad news for our community, but a good friend of ours, former city treasurer Joe Modica, did have a very severe heart attack over this last weekend, is in the hospital, and so our thoughts and prayers, I know of all the council and all the staff and our community, go out to him and his family. We do hope for a recovery. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Councilman Fonzie for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please rise.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie, here. Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Councilmember Kelly.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
And the record will reflect that Mayor Pro Tem Moreno is absent.
Thank you. First item on the agenda is the approval of our agenda. And I will mention that we are waiving the reading in full of all of the ordinances appearing on this agenda. And the title of the ordinance will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. We do not have any presentations this evening. And we will go ahead with a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. As I mentioned, no presentations. We'll move on to the consent calendar, which are items considered to be routine in nature. We won't have a lot of discussion on them unless a member of the council or the member of the public would like to discuss further. Any member of the council wishing to pull a consent calendar item? How about any member of the public? Seeing none, we can entertain a motion to approve all consent calendar items.
I move approval of all consent calendar items.
Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next, we have updates from the city manager.
Thank you, and Mayor and Council's members. We have a... There we go. I want to tell you first about our international students. We had an international student tour. These students are visiting Atascadero this summer to experience U.S. culture and study English. So last Friday, Sherry Gong brought about 100 of the students who are visiting from various countries around the world to tour the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial. Artist Mark Greenaway and Veterans Representatives Al Fonzie and Colonel Bill Hatch spoke to the students about the local Veterans Foundation and the beautiful monument here in Atascadero. It was a great opportunity. Heard from a lot of people who participated giving the tour and others that it was very wonderfully received, so we enjoyed having them. Another good news item is the Friends of the Lake pipeline is flowing. We have water coming out of the pipeline. The project was sponsored by the Friends of the Lake. They raised the funds for this project, did all of the work, got the permits from the city and did this. And the idea was to help supplement the water levels in Atascadero Lake. The pipeline went online at the end of July, and it discharges, the water discharges into a storm drain inlet upstream of the lake, then flows through an existing pipeline that discharges into lake. The well is running full time and yielding approximately 50 to 70 gallons per minute, or about 70,000 gallons per day. This supplemental water helps to partially offset loss of lake water through evaporation and will assist with water quality. Sprouse Communication was contracted by Friends of Lake to install this 3-inch pipeline, and they installed the majority of the pipe using a trenchless method called horizontal direction drilling to minimize excavation and disruptions to the public right-of-way. Final restoration work is expected to be complete this week. So that's an exciting project. It's exciting to walk around the lake and see that water flowing into there. It was a long time coming, and we really want to thank our Friends of Lake and that group that put a lot of hard work into raising the funds and making this happen. So congratulations to them, and thank you from the community. And more good news, FEMA EMI Integrated Emergency Management Course. So the city of Atascadero has received a substantial grant from FEMA to attend their Emergency Management Institute's Integrated Emergency Management Course at their training center in Emmitsburg, Maryland. The grant covers all training costs, travel, and lodging to attend the course. And only 10 to 12 agencies per year are accepted by FEMA to attend the course. There are approximately 75 people that will be attending, including City of Atascadero staff, staff from neighboring communities, Paso Robles, Templeton, the County of San Luis Obispo, the school district, the state hospital, county public health, and a number of emergency response agencies and utilities. Basically, anybody that would be involved in the disaster, we're all going back together to train and work on communication between each other and work through a scenario. The course will include implementing standard operating procedures for disaster and emergency management, such as identifying potential threats and hazards, identifying mutual aid resources and key logistical support, establishing emergency staffing, vehicle and equipment resources, and much, much, much more. It's a great opportunity. Although we hope to never have to put this training into action, it's vitally important to keep our training up to date. We were lucky enough to receive one of these grants in 2009, and it's fantastic that they accepted us again. It's a great experience. So we'll have some long-term employees that were unable to attend last time, plus certainly a lot of new employees that will be attending for the first time, along with all of our cooperating agencies. So we're excited for the opportunity. Marston's 101 is open. So they are doing a soft opening this week. And they had an official soft opening for friends and family on Sunday. And they'll continue with their soft opening. So they're not doing a lot of advertising that they're open this week. But they are open. So they are available for the public to go in and give them a try. Usually you don't want to advertise a lot in the beginning because you don't want to be inundated as you're trying to figure things out, but they would like to see you. They have a full bar with craft cocktails, local wines, and craft beer. The California cuisine menu uses local ingredients. Their signature wood-fired pizza oven is not just for delicious pizzas. They also, in wood oven items include appetizers, entrees, and meat dishes. Their selection includes appetizer, soup, salads, pasta, fish, steak, other meats, plus vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free options, and they are open. So definitely they're open full-blown starting Saturday. Please go to Marston's 101, give them a try. I heard from a couple of people that were able to go to Sunday soft opening, and they said it's good. So that's a great opportunity. And a cruising weekend is coming up very quick. So for the first time ever, the 24th annual Hot El Camino Cruise Night and Mid-State Cruisers Car Show will be extended to include a brand new entertainment event, Dancing in the Streets. This new celebration will include local bands, in fact, 5 local bands, food and beer vendors, antique cars, and lots of dancing. It is free to the public. You do have to buy your beer. There's going to be beer booths put on by several of our local nonprofits, so they will be working those. They'll have food vendor trucks, lots of really good ones, lots of good bands on there, and we'll also have the Dancing with Our Stars there. We'll be performing some acrobats, performing some line dances. It promises to be a fun night. But let me go back to Friday night is when everything starts. Cruise nights Festivities begin at 6:30 p.m. on Friday, August 19th. And that'll be where the cars that sign up will cruise up and down El Camino. It's a wonderful event, something that we've always enjoyed in the past. Then the Mid-State Cruisers Car Show will be at the Atascadero Lake Park on Saturday, August 20th from 10 to 3 p.m. Then beginning at 5 p.m. on Saturday, we'll have dancing in the streets. There will be lots of favorite local bands. The evening promises a full variety of music for everyone's entertainment. It's free. And for more information on all of the events going on the 19th and 20th, mark it on your calendar, visit the website www.visitatascadero.com. So that plans to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. We also have Echo Long Walk Home. We're encouraging everyone to come out and help Echo continue to offer meals, shelter, and critical care management services to our local individuals and families in need by participating in their fifth annual Fun Walk. Saturday, August 27th from 9:30 to 11:30 p.m., starting and ending at the Echo Homeless Shelter on Atascadero Mall. This will be a non-competitive fun walk around the downtown Atascadero with music, lunch, and great prizes at the end of the walk. Registration for the walk is $30 at the door on Saturday, and kids under 18 are free. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Clarify. Let me clarify a thing or two. It's 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. You do not have to walk till 11:30 at night.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it was quite an experience, and I think we've all participated in the past. Fast last year, Mayor Martin and I spent the night that night with chaperoning. And, you know, there's always a need to in helping on the chaperoning at Echo. You can call in there and they'd be happy to add you to the list. Great experience. I did want to say I had Mayor Pro Tem Moreno and I attended the Marston's 101 opening, and I was surprised. I expected the gourmet pizza and a lot of nice appetizers, but they actually have quite the gourmet menu. It's going to surprise people. We had a very nice dinner, and I think people will enjoy going there. Another alternative. Do we want to report anything yet on the Santa Maria Brewing? At least I've heard there's a sign up at a new location. If it's on KPRL, it's like hearing it on Facebook. It's got to be true.
It is my understanding that Santa Maria Brewing has purchased the Gary Bang building, and they had come in for some potential tenant improvements, but we don't have plans at this time or an ETA. So Facebook is probably more up to date than we are, unless Bill can add something.
I'll just add one last thing, that we are actually meeting with them tomorrow with their team to go over their tenant improvement plans. So things are progressing forward.
That'll be a very nice, large location, quite visible from the freeway. Councilman Fonzi.
I just wanted to state that the upcoming FEMA EMI trip is well worth going to. I attended it in 2009 with Mayor O'Malley, and I would say I learned more in that trip about what to do in an emergency and what not to do. And it was in depth, it was hands-on, definitely a good trip for our city to participate in.
Very good. Thank you. Any other comments by council? Thank you for that report. Next item on the agenda is the community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to us on any item that is not on the agenda, but it is under the council's jurisdiction. Anyone wish to speak on that? Seeing no one come forward, unless Luke wants to say something, we will close community forum and bring it back to council, and we will have our first community, our public hearing. Item B1, Community Facilities District number 2016-1. This is a CFD number 2016-1 is designed to be fiscally neutral to the city, with each development within the district covering the full costs associated with the maintenance of specified public improvements. And this is keeping with the council policy entered into years ago, where we want any new development to pay its fair share, its way, so that new development doesn't shift costs onto existing residents. That way we collect enough in fees to cover all of the costs related to the project as well as any maintenance costs, so that we don't erode that service level of police, fire, other services, as well as costs for landscaping, drainage management, and things such as that. So tonight we're going to conduct a formal public hearing. We're going to adopt a resolution regarding the Communities Facilities District. The city clerk will actually have to take account of how the property owners voted, and then we will adopt a resolution that implements the decision of the property owners. And with that, we'll go on that this is the time and place for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed establishment of a Community Facilities District number 2016-1 for maintenance of services. It will also include the proposed rate and method of apportionment of the special tax to be levied on the certain property within the Community Facilities District. And we welcome everyone to this public hearing, which is now officially open. The council has already received and reviewed a Community Facilities District report prepared by Albert A. Webb Associates, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing. We begin with ex parte communications, and what that means is any of the council members disclose to you if we've had any conversations with anyone outside of this public process that may influence our decision, because you have a right to know how we come to a decision, and everything we hear should be at a public forum such as this. So with that, I'll just start from my right and go to my left if there's been any ex parte conversations outside of this public process regarding this project.
No ex parte.
No ex parte?
None.
Thank
you. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our Community Development Director, Phil Dunsmore, for making the presentation on this item.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, members of the council. As you recall, we were back before you in June of this year introducing this CFD and setting the intent date. Now we're back for this, what we call the step two of the CFD process. We do have our consultant here in the audience tonight, too, Heidi from Webb Associates. She can answer our questions. But I'm just going to run through just a couple of quick little slides here just to show you, and for the public, just a little more of the outline of the process and really what this is about. Again, the purpose of this particular community facilities district is the maintenance of landscaping and lighting, which makes this district a little different than what we're used to seeing with the residential CFDs, where it's maintenance of other city services. Now, in this particular case, this CFD will basically cover the maintenance of frontage improvements, curb, gutter, sidewalk, and again, this is to satisfy a condition of the Del Rio specific plan for specifically the Walmart site. Again, just a quick image of the site. It is the frontage improvements that will front this site. This is sort of an older site plan. This doesn't reflect accurately what those public improvements will be today, but it's just an example of where the outline of this boundary is. Again, just as a reminder, this does not affect any other privately owned properties. This is solely for this one particular property owner and does not have an effect on outside properties in terms of tax rate. So the step one meeting, as I mentioned earlier, that was June 28th. That set the intent of the city to establish this CFD. Tonight we're at step two, which is district formation. Tonight's meeting would create the district by a vote of the property owner. From what I understand, we do have that sealed ballot tonight, and we can outline the procedure for how that process works. And essentially, we do need to start this process following my presentation with public testimony, and then the council can take action on the resolution of formation. Then we will turn to the city clerk for the opening of the ballot, which will then be followed by the adoption of a resolution declaring that election. And then also, we can take action on the ordinance, introducing the ordinance that authorizes the tax levy. Now, ultimately, we will have to come back for a second reading on that portion, that ordinance. And then it'll be up to staff to then record that notice of the special tax within 14 days. So tonight, I'm just going to leave you real simply with our recommendation tonight, which is the adoption of the resolution of formation, which does identify those services that are proposed to be funded, and then moving on to the opening of the ballot and a resolution election. So right now, I'll finalize my presentation. I'm happy to answer your questions, and we can move forward with the rest of this process.
Thank you. And this is more of a formal process than we normally go through, so I will ask council at this time if they have questions for staff. We won't go into deliberation or commenting on this project yet. Any questions from staff? Councilwoman Fonzie?
Yes, a question regarding when this would begin to be assessed, that obviously Walmart hasn't broken ground, there's nothing there yet. So when would this assessment actually begin on the property?
That's a very good question. That's been a major question of not only the applicant team, but a lot of others. This would not begin to be an assessment until we actually have physical improvements on the ground that need to be maintained. And then, as a typical CFD tax, it would be levied based on the maintenance costs of those on an annual basis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open up to the public. If anyone in the public has anything to say, any questions to ask, we're happy to listen. Excuse me, if you do have any questions, we'd ask you to come to the lectern and speak in the mic. That way it's recorded. If you just state your name for the record, and we'll get your question and the answer in the record.
Okay. My name is Margot Skye, and I'm just wondering where the Walmart is going to be.
Believe me, we're all wondering that. But actually, I'll let staff respond to that at the close of public comment. There is a designated spot. It's on the map. I was kidding slightly. Any other questions? Seeing no one else approach, we will close the public comment portion and bring it back to the council. I will ask staff again, could you kind of describe the El Camino and whereabouts that is on the map?
So that would be the southeast corner of Del Rio and El Camino Real, which is across the street from the outlets, the Mission Oaks, across the street from the 7-Eleven and gas station that's there now.
Thank you. I assume we have no other questions by council, and so I would now be open to a resolution. We are requested to establish a Community Facilities District 2016-1 maintenance services of the City of Atascadero, authorizing the levy of special tax and calling a special election therein. Is there a motion to adopt staff recommendation on Resolution A?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. At this time, we will ask our city clerk to read the ballots and see what the property owners have indicated based on this request. Even though it's a formal vote, it's a little simpler at this stage because all of the parcels are owned by one entity. So there's only one vote. This could get parceled out and there could be more owners in the future, but it makes it a little easier for the city clerk, but we still handle it in a very formal way as it is an election by the property owners.
Okay, as you said, there is one property, so there's one ballot, and the vote is yes.
Okay, with a yes vote, the resolution that we have just adopted forms the CFD 2016-1 and authorizes what we have just done, we now can entertain the resolution B. And that is the certifying the results of the August 9, 2016 special tax election within the CFD 2016-1 for maintenance services of the City of Atascadero. And that's simple enough statement, and we can ask for a motion on that.
On resolution B, which
we're yes. And just certifying the election, essentially.
Make a motion that we accept, that we adopt resolution B, declaring the results of the special election CFD.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. So now that these resolutions have passed, I will now accept a motion and a second to conduct a first reading of the proposed ordinance by title only, authorizing the levy of the special tax and to introduce the ordinance. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Fonzi, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Okay, now I'm going to read the title before you actually take the
yes.
roll. The title of the ordinance is Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, acting as the legislative body of Community Facilities District Number 2016-1, Maintenance Services of the City of Atascadero, authorizing the levy of a special tax in such Community Facilities District.
Thank you. Go ahead with the roll call.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. So that concludes the public hearing, and we'll now return to the next item on the agenda, which is item B2, confirming the cost of vegetative growth and or refuse abatement. And again, we begin with an ex parte. As I explained, have we heard anything outside of this public process that might influence our decision? I'll go with my left to my right.
None.
None for me?
None.
None.
And I will ask our staff to make the presentation. I believe that's going to be our interim fire chief, Mr. Hubert.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. What you have before you for consideration is a staff report and draft resolution confirming the cost of vegetation growth and or refuse abatement. On April 12, 2016, Council adopted resolution number 2016-016 declaring vegetative growth and or refuse a public nuisance and authorized the fire chief to proceed with the abatement process. On April 25th of this year, notices were mailed to property owners informing them of the city's abatement requirements. A total of 27 parcels were abated by the city this year. This low number is a result of the fire department's consistent efforts to educate the public on the importance of weed abatement compliance. Over 11,000 parcels were inspected, 1,900 notices were sent out, 75 lots were identified for abatement, and as I stated, 27 residential lots were abated by the city's contractor for the county tax roll for the fiscal year 2016-2017. So included in your materials a list of abated parcels and assessed costs. This concludes my staff report and would be glad to answer any questions council may have.
Thank you. Any questions by council? Seeing none, I'll open up to the public. Any public testimony, questions, comments? Seeing none approach, we'll close the public comment portion. Yeah, Mr. Seabock.
I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering about the administrative fee on this schedule. It seems to be about 1.5 times whatever the contractor cost is. And I was wondering how that's determined. It seems odd that you could have a $184 cost. Okay, the administration to handle a $184 bill is something, but then you got a $3,000 bill and the administrative cost is $1,500 basically, or $1,600. Why would that, other than that's easy to do the math, the 1.5, is there a rationale about why the administrative cost is a flat percentage rather than it takes a half an hour to process the same thing, each one, something like that?
Well, Councilman Kelly can't wait to hear if you get a different answer than he's asked in the past years. But I'm going to turn it over to... Haven't got the answer you had hoped for. However, at least it has, the numbers have certainly reduced over time. I'll turn it over to our city manager, and you have discussed this before. Tell us again.
Yes. This is something we've worked out with several consultants. The city does not want to be in the weed abatement business. The idea is not to abate parcels, to not do that. In essence, that admin fee is intended to also be a fine, but for that fine, we have to make sure that it doesn't exceed the actual cost of doing that. The weed abatement program is a very expensive program for the city. It actually entails our staff, not just the contractor, to visit the parcel a total of 4 times, in addition to taking pictures of the parcel, working out all of the billing the parcel, working with the public on all of those things. So what we're trying to do is we would love to see the number of parcels get down to 0, and we would love to see that administrative fee be 0, where we're still visiting the parcels to make sure that people comply, but that they are actually complying and getting this done. The larger the parcel, the more danger typically there is to outlying parcels and to others in the city, and the more critical it is that they do abate their parcels. And this is the structure that that we've imposed with the help of our consultants in a typical fine structure.
And would our city attorney wish to add anything to that comment?
No, I think that says it all.
Wise man. Thank you. Mr. Seebach.
Well, yeah, let me...
And I'm going to say, let me do
I don't
this...
want to throw gasoline on...
On a fire? If I could just... If I could just intervene, I think what I'm going to do is close public comment because I believe I didn't see anyone from the public. You're kind of a quasi... You are the city treasurer.
Just an annoyance.
No, you're a welcome addition. And we'll treat this as a question by the city treasurer.
So let me lay reaction to the city manager's statement that it's more like a fine. Well, okay, then it ought to be called a fine and have some legislative basis for levying the fine. If it's truly recovering the reasonable cost of providing a service, which is what Proposition 4 from 1984 requires, way back, one of the GAN initiatives, how could it be you go out 4 trips out to a quarter-acre parcel and take pictures and write letters to the property owner and hassle with them, and then you got a 20-acre parcel, you go out 4 times, take pictures, write letters, hassle the property owners. I'm doubting that the reasonable cost is really $4,600 in one case and as low as, $276 in another case. That doesn't sound like a reasonable fee for the $4,600. It might be more reasonable to say if it costs the city's time is worth X dollars, then divide the number of parcels equally would be another rationale.
That's what you meant. Okay, and with that, and I don't know that our fire department could add anything. Our interim chief is sure wishing the code enforcement officer was here tonight, who was scheduled to do the report, that is more familiar with this. So if you would like to comment, I think it is an issue more for the city manager and city attorney's office. And there may be, I certainly would support revisiting this, maybe with the city treasurer's input, and ask our city attorney to review this. And it does seem to be, on the surface at least, two components that may well should be separated out. So do you have any response to that? And I think other council members may want to offer.
I would be happy to. We can sit with the city treasurer and go over revenue cost specialists' report and how they arrived at that cost reasonably borne. And we can maybe relook into that. So we will look at that. Maybe the cost should be allocated in a different manner. But that is what revenue cost specialists do, is they do look at those and look at costs reasonably borne. So we'll take a peek.
How long ago was that report research done?
2015?
So it's fairly recent.
2014.
So I'm hearing that staff is going to go ahead and do some research, and then I would like to have our city treasurer report back your thoughts on this, maybe kind of a combined whenever you two agree that that's a possibility. I'm going to open. Did you have anything else to say, Jerry, before I see if other council members? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Seebach. We will follow up. Let's turn over to council members. I'll begin with Councilman Kelly, who's raised a concern similar to this for some time.
Yeah, just one thing. As a member of the Finance Committee, I would possibly be there. You mentioned it was a fine. Don't you have to have a fine schedule? If you're going to fine somebody and you violate something, this is how much it costs. It's like... This is like a variable floating fine deal. Is that legal if it's a fine?
It is. Okay. So it is legally adopted as part of your fee schedule. The scale of the fee was intended for people to do their own weed abatement. So it is legally adopted as a fee. It's part of your fee schedule. The fee says that it is 150% of the cost of the contractor to abate that parcel.
And so I think, did you have other comment or questions, Councilman Kelly?
Together with Jerry.
Yeah. As I recall, I think there was an issue of what's the total cost, and then, of course, it's similar to the gas tax. With the success, your variable costs may well be going down, but you have an increased fixed cost to spread, and I think there's a number of factors that I think Mr. Seebach, CPA, would be, of course, we'd like to have Mr. Seebach hear what I'm saying as soon as Councilman Kelly is done talking. That would be ex parte right there. But since we're not voting on any item tonight, it's not a problem. I would welcome Councilman Kelly or any other council questions or a member of the public if they've had some questions. This would be a good time to get it to the city manager's office. We'll have a publicly notified agenda item where we will review this as a question that's come up. And whenever I leave it with our city treasurer and city manager, when you two feel it's ready to come back to council, I think we should have an open session brief report. And then from there, if action is needed, there might be some recommendations either by staff or the treasurer.
Okay. We can do that. Tonight we do need to approve the tax roll, though, in order to get it on the tax rolls.
Yes, so we still have an item on the agenda, but we are asking for some more work for future. So we have gone through, I believe, all questions council may have. We've gone through public comment. Is there further questions or comments by the council?
It does seem rather high, Rochelle. I know that this is seen as punitive. We don't want to be in the business of doing this. Obviously, weed abatement is extremely important in a city like ours where we have large parcels and have the potential for wildfire. The question I would have is, it looks like we have 27 parcels this year. We had 27 parcels last year. Are these the same 27? So it's having no punitive effect. We're just basically in the weed abatement business.
I think there are some different parcels, and there are some that say, I don't care how much you charge me, it's just easier to have the city do it. Those are the people that we'd like to get to so that it's not as easy to have the city do it.
And we actually hire someone from outside the city to do the weed abatement,
yes,
correct?
Yes, we do.
Very good. All right, I would like to see more information on this. I think 1.5 the times of abating it seems quite high myself.
So anyway, I take it you'll, from these comments, you'll come back with a thorough review and other options that council may consider. Any other discussion by council? Is council prepared to make a motion on this item we have on the agenda, understanding we're going to revisit some of this in the future?
Yes, I make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzi, and not part of the motion, but by consensus, staff is going to go forward with those other things discussed. Ask for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We move on now to our management report. Economic development and commercial district appearance. The signage cleanup strategy. We're very pleased. I'm seeing that we have our executive director from the Chamber of Commerce in the office, very instrumental with the Chamber of Commerce in seeing this not only come forward, but meet with some good success. I'll ask our staff to take it away on the presentation. I believe Community Development Director Mr. Dunsmore are taking the lead, and you're probably going to turn it over to the expert.
That's right. Yes. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. I'm going to give you some background on this. This whole process did start before I arrived here at the city, and it's been going full steam ahead. But as anything else, it is a process, and it's evolutionary, and we're really making some progress now. So I'm going to go back and just kind of rehash some of the things that we've learned over the last year or two and tell you where we're going to be going in terms of, you know, what we suggest for edits to the sign ordinance to make things easier, more palatable for the community, and to really continue that drive of enhancing the appearance of our community and at the same time really striving to just have an, you know, economic development sort of goal, which is consistent with what we learned through the strategic planning process. So just a couple of background items I'd like to show you. You know, it's 2014, and the council did agree that the appearance of the commercial corridor needed to be improved. And in September of that year, the city, along with the chamber, did complete a business walk and looked at the community and looked at what we need to possibly do to really bring this cleanup forward. And then staff at that time did essentially initiate an educational program with the business owners, business leaders, to really help them understand where the city ordinances were at that time and where we'd like to go in the future. So it was in January of last year that the council actually approved an action plan to address the appearance of the commercial corridor. And what we decided to do and what we're asking to do again tonight was a reduction in the permit fees for signs, about a 90% reduction in fees. Really try and look at how we can take in permits online, partner with community leaders, the Chamber of Commerce, and others to really work proactively together to see what could happen. And at the same time, reduce our fees, it doesn't list it here, for the administrative use permit process, which is the sign exception process. And then at the same time, really be proactive about enforcing prohibited signs, illegal signs, temporary signs that have been out there too long, really with that emphasis of just trying to educate the business community on what might work best for them rather than the same old ticky-tacky banner that may have been up there for a year or two. So this became known as the Improve Atascadero Signage Campaign. Approximately 200 businesses or more have been visited since March of 2015. In fact, just recently we did kind of a pass-through town and worked with business owners, about 35 of different businesses, to remove about 35 temporary signs from those businesses. And that was an approach where we walked into the business, introduced ourselves, talked to them about the program, reminded them of the last time we were there, and helped them clean up their prohibited signage right on the spot. And it was a really, really positive effort. It wasn't done as, hey, we're going to do an enforcement. It was, hey, help, can you help us, you know, really implement this program and move forward? And here's how we can get, you know, some better permanent signage for your business. So all in all, when we look back, it's been about 400 hours of staff time spent throughout this process of the entire campaign. But it's produced some success. Here's a before picture of a corridor in South Atascadero along the El Camino Real. And here's an after shot of that same location. And this could be repeated all up and down El Camino Real with a dramatic reduction of the amount of signs that have been in the public right-of-way, blocking sidewalks, or really just a lot of sign competition out there with these temporary signs. So now what we're seeing is compliance is getting easier. There's less to go after. There's only a few that are out of compliance. Typically a new business will come in, they'll have something, we go out and talk with them, and things can easily be cleaned up. Now here's a couple of statistics on what we've seen since we've done the fee reduction. Prior to doing that, we saw very few of these use permits, very few permits coming in. After the reduction, we did see a dramatic increase in folks coming in for sign permits, coming in for the administrative use permits to get the exceptions, to get the signage they need for their business. So it has been a success. Now there has been, I will note, a very slight loss in revenue. And that short-term loss really should be overshadowed by the longer-term gain. The really, you know, the significant improvement of the quality of the appearance of the corridor. It really puts us in line with being more competitive economically with other communities. And it's the goal has been to strive to improve our relations with local businesses and help them understand what our goal is. Not to hammer them, but to really help them be successful. Now, the fee program that we have right now is set to expire at the end of this month. As we mentioned before, we'd like to see that extended. The proposal on the table right now is to extend that to next February. I'm sorry, let's make that February 2018, still 2016. I'm already fast-forwarding this to the next year. And so the recommendation would be to extend that reduced building permit fee to the flat $50 fee and then extend the administrative use permit fee, which is that exception process, until that February 1st, 2018 date. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Alfredo talk to you about what we have learned in terms of our sign ordinance and where we intend to go with that. In a very short time, we're actually going to be bringing that ordinance back to you for action tonight. I think as an attachment, we have some examples of what we'd like to do. And it essentially, I don't want to steal the energy from Alfredo, but it's actually two pieces. It's some amendments to our code to improve the usability and to improve the types and amounts of signage that businesses can have. But then it's also creation of this signage handbook that has graphics and examples and illustrations of sign installations and the kind of sign installations that we're looking for, quality signs that meet the intent of our ordinance.
Thank you, Phil.
So, you know, over the last year or so that we started really back in January and ramped it up in spring of last year, extending over to now, we really have sort of these lessons that we've learned from, you know, not only from our perspective of, you know, utilizing our existing regulations, but also the business outreach, the business walks that we've done, particularly in October 2014, as well as spring of 2015, new businesses that have opened up, and just really listening to the sign companies, the chamber, and others. Again, really taking this very proactive business-first approach. The reason why a lot of these, our businesses here are utilizing these banner signs, A-frame signs, and other types of temporary signage is really what's outlined in the staff report, and it's in the screen above. First one is just poor visibility. So On our commercial corridor, El Camino Real, typically the speed limit's between 35, 45 miles an hour, except for the downtown. And we have a lot of deep lots. And what that means is these lots are very elongated. And so we have commercial businesses that not only front along El Camino Real, but are deep into the lot, maybe three, four, or five businesses in. So they're really working to get that sort of visibility from the cars that are passing by, as well as new customers who may not know they exist there at that location. So the second item is the cost of permanent signage. As a new business startup, a lot of business owners aren't necessarily thinking about signage off the bat, and that can be a really expensive position to be in, not only to do the initial business startup, the incubation of a business, but then you have to worry about signs and advertising and other things. So some businesses, especially those that are more on the marginal end, aren't really thinking ahead in terms of what type of signage, what type of visibility, what do they need for their business to thrive in our community, knowing the lay of the land, or conversely, knowing how their new business or building is set up. The third item is the inability to work with property owners. So we do have a wide range of commercial buildings throughout the city, and it's particularly ranging in age. So we have a lot of commercial buildings that were built in the 70s and the early 80s and mid-80s to the early 90s. And so with that being said, property owners that are the businesses that are renting from property owners who aren't proactive and they just don't do or spend money and invest in the properties that they've constructed or that they've obtained. And so they want to invest in their property, but at the same time they're renting a space, so they really don't want to go that extra step into investing in a new signage. So there's that disconnect between the property owner as well as the tenant or the business owner. So that's a tough one to overcome. So the first three bullets are really items that the city doesn't really have too much control in. We don't have control in terms of the deepness of a lot. We don't have control over the cost of permanent signage for businesses, because that's an expense that they have to go through. And then nor do we have that ability to really work and help be that bridge between the property owner and the tenant, et cetera. The last three items, however, are in our grasp and are things that we can do to help businesses with their signage, improve that commercial look of that corridor, and really, again, move ahead in our economic development and embrace the way our corridor is shaped and formed. The first one is the cost of signs. It was evident from the onset of the program in 2014, where we only issued 14 sign permits at $450 a pop. That's pretty expensive. That reduction, and you saw a substantial 300% fold increase in sign permits coming in, and they're still coming in today. Over the last couple of weeks, we have quite a few businesses call and ask when the program's going to end, and so they've been trying to rush and get those permits in before the end of the program. So we'd like to obviously extend that program because it's been a success coupled with this business-first approach. The second one is the confusion of what signage is allowed, and that's really our code at work. Is our code is confusing to begin with. It's a little bit out of order. It's tough for us as staff to sometimes interpret it. So really, if it's tough for us to staff as a staff to interpret this, and in working with this code very intimately for the last year and a half, I think I finally now got a grasp of the sign types and locations. And that's taking me a year and a half of just looking into this code. Imagine trying to help a new business owner coming right off the chute and providing them the code. They may not understand, as well as our signage experts may not necessarily understand as well. And finally, the limitation of city code for multi-tenant centers on deep lots. So the first one was poor visibility because we have deep lots to begin with. At the same token, we've really recognized that our code doesn't help it at all. So it's, it's very limiting in terms of size, place, and manner. And so that's something that, on our end, we can help alleviate that with proposed sign amendments. So the mantra that really that we're trying to formulate and we're asking City Council to weigh in is this idea of being a business partner versus a regulator. I know it's a very odd concept in government, but we really want to help be a partner with our businesses here, incubate them, let them grow and thrive, and how can we be that partner to them? The use of temporary signage is a concern from our standpoint because, again, a banner can be up there for months on end and be weathered in sun, weathered in rain. The weather just takes a lot of conditions to it, and then it just ends up being a little bit gaudy. At the same token, as a business owner, you don't want that sign to be your first representation to your new customers. So this becomes a concern for everybody. And again, the need for sufficient signage is evident by the number of signage exceptions requested. So we had one signage exception requested in 2014. We've had 11 so far as a part of the signage program, and continually we get questions about how can I make a signage exception. The last one is that the sign ordinance hasn't really been revised since 1991. We've had minor updates. The biggest overhaul was in 1991, but we had minor updates in 2003 and 2006. But overall, it really hasn't been touched. And so it's really sort of been standing in time in terms of where we were at a city, basically in the early 90s. So things have changed, and it's really time for us to look at our sign ordinance and, again, really ask ourselves, do we want to be a partner in our local businesses, or do we want to regulate and be a big regulator and enforcer of that? So I have a couple images and examples. This one is a pre-1991 sign regulation. This is a building that was done in the mid-80s. And so this is over off of El Camino Real. Really just had just the name of the complex. It's at 6-foot high limit. It's what we considered a freestanding sign. But the biggest one is that it limited tenant signage. Now, the first picture on the left is I'm standing at 10 feet. So it's really easy at 10 feet to read the tenants that are in the center. But imagine on the picture on the far right, that's from approximately 250 feet away on a 45-mile-an-hour road, which is El Camino Real. It's technically 4.1 seconds of visibility. Now, if you can imagine reading that little tenant sign for each individual tenants at 45 miles an hour, it's virtually impossible. And so that's where it goes back to tenants in these large, deep centers are really fighting for visibility, because at the time, they were just given that little, about less than 10 square feet of signage on a very, what we consider nowadays, a small freestanding monument sign. And so what ends up happening is the businesses then fight for visibility. So that's where you get the A-frame signs, that's where you get the banner signs, that's where you get the sign clutter all around the entry of the center, because again, it's the same sort of message that we've heard from business after business after business. We can't be seen from El Camino Real, so the A-frame sign is our only way of being seen. The banner sign is the only way of being seen. It's the only directional sign available to us. Again, there's a multiple of things at work, working with the landlord to replace the signage, working with their tenants in terms of if they are a condo, working within the condo group to replace the signage. We want to be able to allow that to happen without going through a huge amount of sign exceptions. This center was done in 2003. Again, it's on El Camino Real. It's the location where Bristol Cider House is, as well as the pit. 60 square feet of sign face. It's the maximum that's allowed in our current code as it stands today. It's at 8 foot in height, which is about 2 feet under in height, but it still meets the regulations, and approximately 10 square feet per tenant. So there are 8 tenants that are there that could have the sign, but again, the signs are just really limited to 10 square feet. Again, utilizing sort of the same metrics, the photo on the right is about 10 feet away, the photo on the left is 10 feet away, and the photo on the right at 250 feet away, 45 miles an hour road, 4.1 seconds of visibility, you can just... Where the circle is essentially what you're seeing from a car level, but I'm walking, I'm a pedestrian there. So again, that's really fighting hard for visibility, fighting hard to find this is where I am, this is where you turn off. So these are things that in our code that we really should, and we're recommending that those things get changed. And this is yet another example of monument signage again along El Camino Real. 8 tenants, there are some signage that's on there, it's less than 10 square feet. The base conforms with our existing code, it's decorative. However, again, these are really tough to see. You can see them in stop and go traffic, but you really can't necessarily see them on a free flow during a Wednesday afternoon at about 3 o'clock. So it's really tough to make that movement. So this is going over really visibility, trying to help businesses out to be able to pull off that traffic off of El Camino Real or Morrow Road. The second component to not only is our existing ordinance and how it's functioning with the lay of our land today, but is also conforming to new court cases. So the courts, specifically the Supreme Court, they're very specific on what municipalities can regulate in terms of signage. The biggest ones are time, place, and manner. So time being the length of time a sign can be placed. So in our current code, where we have temporary banner signs that can be up for 30 days, but then must be brought down for 60 days. That's an example of time. Place is another example. So on wall signs, they can't be below certain heights. that's an example of place, so where we can place a wall sign or where we can place a projecting sign. So that's an example of place. And then manner is sort of heights and sizes. So a wall sign for most commercial and industrial businesses, they're limited currently right now to 40 square feet. So even though a business has 100 square feet in frontage along El Camino Real, they're still only limited to 40 square feet. That doesn't really make much sense, but that's the way it's currently regulated in our code today. So that's basically the tenets and principles that municipalities have been utilizing to regulate signs in their municipal codes. A final criteria has really emerged over the last 10 to 15 years, and it's called content neutrality. In 2015, there was a landmark Supreme Court case known as Reed versus the Town of Gilbert, which really hammered down the idea of sign ordinances being what's considered content neutral. And that's allowing either commercial or non-commercial messages all in the same location, all things being said equal. So the city must treat all signs equally. So what that means is that currently in our code, we define a political sign. And we allow them in the right-of-way. Well, we don't allow other signs in the right-of-way. That's not equal. And so that's not considered content neutral at this point. And a challenge could be made upon by a business to allow for us to do right-of-way signs. Conversely, non-commercial signages may replace commercial signs. So this is the Nemo building, which is along El Camino Real. As you can see, you have four commercial sign plates that are there for businesses, and then one non-commercial message. So our sign ordinance is supposed to treat all commercial and non-commercial sign messages the same. So if someone were to call and complain about that, we're not allowed to enforce it because we're supposed to treat them equally. So right now, our sign code cannot specifically call out certain signs that are content-specific. Again, this is all coming out of the 2015 Supreme Court case. So right now, our sign ordinance as it stands calls out for real estate signs, construction signs, political signs. All those are actually content-specific signage. And so we need to go ahead and make it content neutral, and there are ways that staff is coming up to make those type of signage content neutral and be more consistent with new court case laws. So we have four sort of items that we're proposing to revise as part of this, the sign ordinance. The first one is, again, revision to our ordinance to ensure content neutrality and specifically to exempt signage. Revisions to allow for additional signage based on building sizes. As I mentioned earlier, we have right now wall signs in particular that have that 40 square foot limit. We want to be able to morph signs that go along with their building size. It kind of makes sort of practical sense. Additionally, we want to add new signage types and other additional options to our new businesses and property owners. So be able to look at our sign ordinance and say we've seen some new type of signs that are out there, or give business owners additional tools in their tool chest to be able to advertise and do more better looking temporary signage at a much more permanent standpoint. And then finally, clarification of prohibited signage signs throughout the city. So going back again to that content neutrality, a lot of these photos were taken over the last few days. So remove terms like real estate signs or political signs. The biggest one is adding what's called a substitution clause. So that substitution clause basically acts as saying that if you're able to do a commercial sign in this area, then you're able to do the same non-commercial signage as the exact equivalent. Redefine political signs as temporary non-commercial signage. So as you can see there, that photo, there, that's technically considered a non-commercial sign for its message. We don't want to violate the First Amendment rights for someone in a resident to speak out, whether it's a political belief, whether it's a spiritual belief, you name it. But we need to treat all signs equally, so be able to do that as a part of an overhaul of temporary non-commercial signage. And again, really go back to time, place, and manner in terms of how we regulate those type of signs, if we regulate those type of signs. Revisions to allowed signage. So again, removing arbitrary limits for items such as wall signage. So currently in our sign ordinance, and again, I'll harp back to wall signs and suspended signs, we have sort of this really tight boxed in frame limits of certain signs. We want to be able to, again, utilize sort of more common sense reform. That's something that the council's really, spoken to as a part of their strategic goal efforts. Using common sense reform, let the signage morph with the building, let it begin to still have limits set, but if a building is 60 square feet, then you can potentially have a 60-foot square foot wall sign. You're still an overall maximum limit, and that won't change. But again, give the business owners, give landlords, give tenants the ability to have more tools in that tool chest to better fit and align their type of permanent signage for their business needs. Secondly, allow new types of signs, include signs on light poles and private lots. So the image there on your screen is an example of a light pole sign. So these are light pole, these are signage that are in parking lots. There are typically percentage coverages that are there, so we don't want every single light pole to have a sign. But at the same time, you give them criteria, make be able to have decorative end caps, decorative poles, and be able to change in and out. And that way it gives not only, let's say, a large shopping center the ability to change out signs for certain seasons or advertise certain sales, but also gives them ability to advertise, you know, specific sales during time of the months, and sort of give that extra ability to at the same time give businesses temporary signage, but at least make it look well-placed with the building and with the aesthetics of the community. And then finally, adding additional signage such as awning, projecting signs, and suspended signs in all commercial zones. Our signage ordinance did a really good job of describing sign types in the downtown, but then we kind of forgot about everything else. So we want to actually be able to do those type of signage outside of the downtown, because we've done a great job in focusing in terms of our signage efforts and giving signage handbooks for the downtown, but we sort of forgot about everywhere else. So it's time to let's think about our corridor and let's think about everywhere else and allow those additional tools. The biggest change is actually going to be what's known as the freestanding monument signage. So currently in our code, freestanding monument signage is actually only allowed for commercial businesses of 5 or more tenants. That doesn't really make much sense. So allow for centers with 2 or more tenants to have sort of this monument type of signage. Increase the heights to 12 feet. So currently, right now, our monument signs are only allowed for 8 feet to 10 feet. Let's be able to increase that signage height to 12 feet. And again, really trying to reduce the amount of administrative use permits or AUPs for exceptions to our sign ordinance, and really beginning to recognize that El Camino Real isn't this pedestrian-oriented place in certain sections. It's 35, 45 miles an hour, and so we need to treat that as such. And this is something we've really heard from our local signage companies and our businesses that we can't be seen. Rather than establishing maximum signages, establish minimum size signage signs for tenants. So again, at 10 square feet, that's really hard to see at 45 miles an hour. At 35 miles an hour, those, traveling through, those are really hard to see. So being able to establish not only the ability to do these freestanding monument signs, but also being able to establish minimums for certain tenants. So that way, again, larger typefaces, easier to read, easier to find, and it's a cohesive nature and character for a multi-tenant center. And again, allow signage to increase based on center size. So rather this sort of one-size-fits-all approach, really let the sign ordinance morph to the way it's supposed to be, and let it, you know, if a certain center is larger in size in terms of the amount of tenants, then let that signage morph into something larger as well to go with it. Whereas they're smaller multi-tenant signs, they still are able to fit in that box that we've established. As with everything, we do have new types of temporary signs that weren't really envisioned in 1991 or 2003 that have really come along since then. So the first one is this idea of projected image signs. So these are quickly becoming very popular, especially in larger urban areas. But these are signs that businesses, what they do is they hook up an LED box, essentially, and project images on blank walls or on through windows. And it's very cheap. It's very easy. They're able to form it the way it is. And it's pretty much enclosed in the building itself. This should be another, again, utilizing another tool for our businesses to advertise special events, special sales, or anything else to really get that drive and attention out to businesses from passerbyers. Second one is codifying person signs. So we have the folks at Twirl, and again, this is more in the spirit of content neutrality. Some communities don't want to go there. Others, they want to outright and ban them. So again, us really try to take a look at sort of an approach where We allow them, but give them a time, place, and manner to do that. And again, understanding and utilizing the content-neutral approach. So in the two images below, we have the first, the middle image is actually someone that was out there today at the corner of El Camino Real and Moore Road advertising a non-commercial message. That's okay. That's fantastic. At the same token, in the bottom corner, we have a commercial message person sign. So how do we regulate both at the same time? That's something that we're recommending. We do at least get on the books so that we're able to now respond to not only businesses who call and request to see if they can do that, or right now our answer is, well, it's not codified, so we're staying silent. And conversely, we do have some residents that call and complain about it. So that way we have something in the books to give an answer. And then again, codify what we're considering temporary commercial signage on residential properties, i.e. real estate signs, just in another name and manner. But really, again, looking at sort of what's out there today and a lot of, if you haven't noticed along 101, we do have a larger real estate signs for residential property along 101 and 41. However, they're going contrary against our ordinance today because our ordinance is a one-size-fits-all approach. So really beginning to recognize that those properties that have freeway frontage, that have highway frontage, at cars that are going by faster speeds may need additional signage to sell those properties. So again, really trying to move forward and think, what's with the lay of the land. Atascadero tends to have a little bit larger lots, a lot more highway frontage. Let's give that ability right off the bat rather than doing a sign exception. And finally, clarifying sort of the prohibited signs. So eliminating all temporary signage outside of right-of-way. So right now, our sign ordinance is sort of everywhere. It allows political signs to be in the right-of-way. It doesn't allow certain signs to be in the right-of-way. Basically clarifying that and eliminating A-frame signs and those type of signs, every single sign outside the right-of-way. The second one is prohibiting the feather flags. So right now, our sign ordinance is not very clear about it. We've had policies that prohibit them, so really codifying that feather flag policy and putting it in plain English that we don't allow them. Prohibit what's known as LED signs or electronic signs. That prohibition is currently, again, it's not clear. It's in the book. It's sort of a policy that it's there, but let's go ahead and codify that. And then clarifying our vehicle signage. So sort of the last step to all these amendments and all that is this, as Phil had mentioned, is creating a signage handbook. So very similar to what we've brought before you in the land use definition update in terms of creating the zoning handbook of easy-to-use development standards, staff wants to create a signage handbook. This should be an easy-to-use guide that's very colorful, uses a lot of imagery, uses a lot of pictures, and make it readily available. The key to having all this is, as we solicit feedback from not only you as the council, the planning commission, our constituents, the sign companies, and the chamber, we want this document to be ready to go at day one. And so really work with the proposed amendments and get it into a nice, easy-to-read document that's available online, in print, and at the front counter. And so the signage handbook should only be about 12, 13, 14 pages, but again, very illustrative, done on staff's time with our knowledge and capabilities, and really give something that we can hand out to our new businesses as they come through the door. Because usually, again, our business-first approach is to really help our, especially these new businesses out, let them know what they can and cannot do, and be able to hand something out to them and say, hey, this is our signage package. You know, go get with a sign professional. This is what will help you get to need where you need to go. So the key to all this is, again, this signage handbook, making it easy to use, readily available to our businesses as well as our residents. So in conclusion, our temporary signs, they send a negative message, especially when we have a large amount of temporary signs. As Phil has shown earlier, we had a huge amount of A-frame signs in the right-of-way. It really doesn't send that sort of positive image in terms of our commercial corridor. So the signage campaign has been very successful in using this business owner first mentality, working with our businesses, talking to our businesses, going there, listening to what they have to say, and at the same token, dropping those fees. And we are recommending the continuation of reduced signage fees. That has really done a heavy impact in terms of cleaning up our corridor and making our corridor a lot less cluttered and a lot more welcoming, especially to our tourists as we really focus on events, drawing in people, our promotions. That's the first thing people see off the freeway. That's the first image that people see is Atascadero. We want to present a beautiful image so that people visit for another day. Amendments to the signed ordinance include reorganization of the code. So as I mentioned before, our code seems to be mishmashed everywhere, make it a very logical, easy-to-use code from a staff perspective, as well as for residents and business owners. The second one is the creation of a handbook, make it easy to use for our new businesses and our signage companies, give that ready to go. The addition of new sign types, especially the freestanding signs for our multi-tenant centers, and give that ability, that extra tool. Tie signs to building sizes and other types of easy-to-use remedies. Allow additional sign types found in downtown to other parts of the community. And then finally, make our ordinance more content-neutral. And with that, I will turn it over to the council for questions.
Thank you. Let's begin with any council questions first. I'll look to the lights. First, we have Councilwoman Fonzi.
Thank you. Good report. This is a very complex, all-encompassing ordinance, obviously. I was a little surprised when you said there wouldn't be a minimum size. There would be a minimum size that a sign could be, but not a maximum. And the first thing that came to mind was a convenience store that we all know about that puts signs up on the neighboring fences on both sides to advertise beer and other sundry items. How are we going to handle something like that without a maximum size that we can enforce?
The max signs will still stay in place. So it's more particularly pertaining to the freestanding monument signage. So those signs that are having multiple tenants having a minimum size that's established. But in terms of signs on fences, all that will remain. Currently, those are prohibited. That will remain prohibited. Each zone currently, as it stands today in the sign ordinance, has a maximum square footage. So if you're a new business, your max sign square footage is 150 square feet. Now, how you get there is really up to you. You can have a wall sign. You can have a monument sign. You can have a suspended sign. You can have various type of signage types, but they all have to equal 150 square feet. If, of course, there's something that you want to do that's completely different and outside the box, the AUP process is still available for you to use. That still all remains the same. So, but at this point in our juncture, a great example, again, is the wall size. So of that 150 square feet, our current ordinance limits the monument signs to 60 square feet. That's it. Our current ordinance limits wall signs to 40 square feet. So you can have a very long building, but only at 40 square feet. So really, we're trying to loosen that regulation up by still keeping the maximum. So in terms of what we said earlier of doing minimums, again, that's more pertaining to a particular type of freestanding sign in the multi-tenant.
Very good. And in terms of person signs, I wasn't sure that I understood what the final outcome was. You said that some cities are opposed to the person with the billboard on their front or whatever it may be, Subway sandwiches or pizza for $5. But then we had other free speech issues where people were having religious or political signs that they're waving. How are we dealing with that?
So right now our ordinance doesn't say anything about it. So it can, it just remains silent. At this point in the proposed text and the attachments, staff is recommending that we do allow them. But again, if they're allowed, that they're allowed in the sidewalk, but they don't impede traffic, they don't have a sign that's lit and really visibly for vehicles becomes a hazard issue. So again, that's staying in the time, place, and manner. If it's a commercial message sign, it's only allowed to be adjacent to the property. If it's a non-commercial sign, they're allowed to do that. So it's trying to, again, fit a box for each type of signage, but right now there is none. As a previous consultant, I did work for a municipality that wanted to get rid of them wholesale, but that's because they had every single weekend a plethora of new homes, with each individual home developer having their own sign guy, and so they had about four or five different folks wheeling arrows at intersections. But as we quickly learned, that the signs and the home builders, they gathered together, so it became a very hot button issue where they just pushed it off to the side. What we're recommending is, again, stay content neutral, give it a box, give it a time, place, manner, and go from there.
And how will we deal with those who have home businesses that often you drive down the street and you see someone that has a sign that says eggs $3 a dozen? You know it's from the chickens in their backyard, or could be a temporary fruit stand, a firewood, whatever it may be. It's residential versus commercial, but it's quasi-commercial as well.
Those don't change. So currently, we in our code, it's in our code, it's actually it's different in two places. We want to change that. Obviously, we want to stay consistent. So in one portion of the code, it says 2 square feet. In the other portion of the code, it says 4 square feet. We want to make it 4 square feet, make it consistent. That won't change. And those are typically exempt from any sign permits.
And that would go for the political signs as well that are in someone's front yard, let's say, that's facing a street?
That is correct. So, again, content neutrality. So if you're at the same type of sign, if you're advertising, say, you're a bookkeeper and you have a sign in your home, you can do the same thing for a non-commercial sign.
And are we dealing with the idea of art being a sign or not being a sign that we've discussed murals in the past, but sometimes the picture is of whatever the business may be selling?
Yes. In the draft form that you have in the attachment, it did address murals. So in it specifically said wall murals with a non-commercial message requires an AUP. However, it is exempt from fees. That's from city council direction, I want to say 2011 was the direction we were given for that. So that's codified in today. Staff recommends we continue with that policy, again, because we don't want to go into the weighting of, is this a commercial message? Is this not a non-commercial message? Those type of items.
So is that something that we need to have reviewed by the city attorney once again, just in case laws have changed before we put the handbook out?
I'm assuming that we want the city attorney to weigh in on all proposed revisions once they all come from our ends and they're about ready in draft form.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly.
Thank you. Very good report, Alfredo. And I know you kind of spearheaded the program from the beginning and you've done a really great job. We can see the results of it. I know at the Design Review Committee we have sign issues come before us. And I think one of the ones that really nobody paid any attention to was mostly our fast food restaurants, that they put signs in almost all of their windows and change them on a continual basis as they have different specials and what have you. And if you accumulate the square footage of those signs with the building signs, it far exceeds anything that's allowed in the code right now. Do you have any ways that you're going to address something like that?
So currently in our code, but to tell you how much I've worked with our code, outside of the downtown, the maximum amount of window coverage is 50%. So that's so a great example. Is I don't want to pick it on it. So Lon Allen has picked on it for us quite a few times. Is the Carl's Jr. Over at El Camino Real and Morrow Road? Are they currently exceeding the 50% rule? Yes, they are. Has that been a direction to go after from the council? No. So that's why we've sent letters as we've seen violations to certain businesses. But at this point, it's not the proactive temporary sign that we're going off because currently they're permit exempt. In the downtown, that actually drops down to 20 square feet. 20% of the window, not 20 square feet. So is that something that right now, does it work? Yes, it does. Does it not work? No, it doesn't. So really it just depends on, again, our previous director. And the previous times we've brought this issue up is that temperature gauge, if you recall, saying what temperature do you want to do with the window signs? And so, again, those regulations are already in the book. It's just a matter of do you want city staff to begin enforcing it?
Do you think it's worth looking at that it seems, I would say, the majority of them are probably in violation, and it doesn't seem to be offensive to most people in town, that it's a normal way of doing business. Do you think we might want to adjust that to what really is working for them and what is not offensive to the public or the city?
I think the concern here might be is if we say, all right, we're going to allow 80% now, then we're going to get 100%. I mean, I think we need to have some reasonable way that if we really needed to, if we had a business that's got a really huge glass windows, that comes in and they want to cover a huge amount that, and it's in, on a corner site that's really visible and it really becomes a problem. We want to still be able to enforce that. So we have to be really careful, I think, with how we increase that. and how we follow up on that.
Would that be something that can be modified with the administrative use permit so there is some flexibility?
Certainly.
There?
Okay. The entire code has flexibility in terms of if someone really needs something different and they've really got the justification for it, they have a unique site, they can come in and get a use permit, and we can make findings to justify that.
Great. Thank you. Councilman Sturdivant.
Yeah, I really appreciate all the hard work because I can really see the difference going up and down El Camino and here in the town. It really looks good. And I can see how this is like taking it to the next level. You know, you guys going through that code, I saw the changes you guys were making. That code is really, there's a lot of things misplaced in different places. It doesn't flow very well, so I commend you for that. And the handbook is a great idea. But what I'm curious about is that you mentioned several times about morphing. And just for clarity, if I'm understanding you correctly, does that mean that you're looking for ways to be more flexible so less people have to use the AUP process? Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, very much so. So the Design Review Committee, to which Councilmember Fonzi and Councilmember Kelly sit on, they've seen pretty much all these AUPs that have come through the door. The vast majority of them are looking for taller monument signage. As well as we've seen a couple of residential subdivisions go through as well, because it was sort of an afterthought. And it's one of those things where, you know, we're putting homeowners associations and other you know, types of homeowner groups that want to build a nice sign for their community. They have to go through an AUP process, which is sort of an oddity. Most communities actually allow that straight up with just a building permit. For us, for whatever reason, we set it, I think, at, I believe it's 22 units is what it's set at. So there's really no rhyme or reason. So as it's proposed in the draft form and the staff's ideology is to tie it to something that's tangible. In this instance, the state of California has a MAP Act, 5 units or more is a subdivision tract. Hey, what do you know? Tie it to that. So we typically have used 5 as a threshold. That's an idea of being able to, again, loosen up and add more flexibility to our regulations. And again, the monument signs are a huge one. 60 square feet. As illustrated in a couple of those images, it's nothing when you're going along El Camino Real, specifically on certain stretches where it's wide open and folks aren't doing 45 miles an hour, to be quite honest. They're going a lot faster than that sometimes. And so being able to give our businesses the flexibility to increase that signage at just a staff level and a building permit level goes a long way because that's one less regulatory step that they have to go through. And so that's one less hoop. And it's more business-friendly, more inviting, more welcoming.
So is this something, is this a standard? Is there going to be a maximum limit listed in the regulation? Then you would have the flexibility to adjust by the building? I mean, what does that look like? I guess that's a...
So yeah, there's... So again, very similar to a site that typically has 150 square feet maximum in terms of the total amount of signage. So again... At that 150, that could be, say, a 60-square-foot wall sign coupled with a, you know, 60-square-foot or 80-square-foot monument sign. You know, now you're almost there. And so maybe a couple little suspended signs along the walk, and we'll call it good. Those maximums will remain in place. And same with the monument signs. We have a max that remains in place. So at this point, it's 100 square feet, which seems kind of tall when you think about it. Mm-hmm. But again, it's really letting the adjustment happen based on building size, based on frontages. That's the key, is being able to increase those, knowing that cars travel a little bit faster, and we're not, you know, some areas aren't looking for pedestrian-friendly signs. They need visibility. Mm-hmm.
So you were mentioning here that you're looking for our input, and you're looking for input from the business community and also from signage companies. What does that look like? Is that something that's ongoing? Is that something that you're going to be working on continually, or are there meetings? Are there public workshops? What does that look like?
So go ahead.
So that's one thing we haven't spelled out for you real clearly. What's the path forward from here? Our intent from here is to actually just contact in person the sign companies in town, contact Linda right out here that's in the audience, and contact folks in the community, give them a draft of where we're going, invite them to the Planning Commission hearing, which we intend to take this to next month right away. We intend to come back to the council also right away to your next hearing really quickly to get this thing rolling. So we feel that we're about 90% there, but we just didn't want to adopt this without getting that little bit additional input. We've had a lot of input all the way through this process over the last couple of years, so we've had a lot of that. We just want a little bit more to tell them, here's what we've learned, here's what we're doing, come to our Planning Commission hearing if we have some comments, and here's where we're going to adopt it. So that's really our path forward at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We are in the middle of council questions still on the staff report. When we exhaust all the council's questions, we're going to open it up to the public. We want to hear then any questions you may have or comments, and then after that, we'll bring it back to council. Council will give additional direction to staff if we want to make any modifications or things we'd like to see, and we'll also be voting on keeping the fees at a lower level. So we're still in council questions. Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I would just like to address the flexibility that we've been talking about. I think it's a really important part of the process here. And as an example on the Design Review Committee, we did have a business come before us that sits quite a ways off of El Camino. They wanted to replace some signage and everything, and there was a 36-inch height that they were dealing with. And after much discussion, we came up and said, well, you're so far off the road, would you like to have some bigger ones? And we allowed, I think, 48 inches so that people on El Camino could look down there and actually see the sign. So the program is working. The flexibility is the key to the whole thing. And I commend you guys for being flexible. And that's just part of the trying to be business friendly. So thank you for your efforts.
Any other council questions? Go ahead, Councilwoman Fonzie.
I'm sorry, new things come to mind. That one of the things that I really like, and I want to make sure it is not prohibited, are some of the signs that they paint on windows, particularly at holidays, that say, you know, happy holidays to our customers, and they take up the whole window, but they go away shortly after whatever that special event may be. Is that considered a mural? Is that a sign? How are we handling that one, or we're just going to ignore it and let it be?
So currently, our code calls it a holiday decoration. Unfortunately, a holiday can be construed as not being content neutral. So again, it's just part of rebranding it into a non-commercial message and allowing it to happen. And so that in that instance right now, that type of signage is considered a decoration under our code. Doesn't need a permit. It's exempt. We want to continue that exemption through. But again, sort of very similar to the real estate sign where you kind of got to rebrand it to something more non-committal. Sure. We'll make it non-committal.
That makes sense. And in terms of the prohibited signs, you mentioned the feather signs that have been very popular. But having lived here quite a long time, I think that the public is very creative in the way that they come up with new signs. I'm just wondering how you're going to deal with that. In the past, we've seen blown up gorillas that are somehow duct taped to the tops of cars. We've seen all kinds of interesting things that bring your attention to the business that they're in front of. And I'm just wondering how we're going to keep our handbook up to date with new things coming in all the time.
And I think this is very similar to what we've mentioned before, especially now that Mr. Dunsmore is on here aboard. Is it's not meant to, you know, we've gone long periods of time where we don't touch things. And this is a living document and sort of treated as such. So as new technologies approach, and as we mentioned, this projecting image sign, no one uses it here in Atascadero. It's just not used. However, other businesses are using it, and eventually it's going to creep up in there. Better to be proactive than reactive. So again, as stuff comes up, that is something that we can then take a look at and bring back to you as a part of just regular yearly code updates. But right now there's a lot. The one thing about that I want to mention is that our sign code isn't bad. It's not like it's the worst thing since sliced bread. It's really not. It's actually a pretty well written code. It's just tweaking things here and there, and then reformatting it and organizing it to have it make sense. So we have quite a few definitions already that already thinks about probably a good 98% of signs. The other 2% are just signs that are really virtually impossible to do here in town because we don't have very tall buildings, so we can't do a 12-foot tall, you know, building mural that's temporary that advertises a movie that's going to come out. So, but again, being flexible and being able to revisit the code is the best approach for that.
Very good. I must say I'm very pleased with the cooperative, business-friendly way that we're going at this. I think this is very refreshing. I'd love to hear from the chamber, from Linda Henney later, if we could.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the public. Welcome your input. Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Good evening, council members, mayor. My name is Lindy Hendy, president of the Chamber of Commerce here in Atascadero. And of course, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to Alfredo for putting in basically two years hard work on this project. It's definitely been a partnership with the chamber and the council members and all the city staff. And I can tell you it's been a partnership that we've continued on, and it definitely shows with the success of the program. You can see by the not only the photographs, but the different businesses that I've heard from that can walk into the city and get answers, and get help with signage in any department, even with the chamber. So it's been very much just a great effort. We seem to be on the same page with trying to work everything out. And I think the reputation that you've really earned is a business-friendly city of Atascadero. So, I mean, I think you should be proud of that. We really work hard to get businesses in our town. So that's something I'm very proud of. And I know several of our board members of the chamber have also taken up the opportunity to get new signage on their buildings as well through that discounted permit process. So it's been a great success for us. We're very excited about it. We definitely see that it's still a work in progress. I'm excited for the handbook. I know we definitely need that. We have an outdated brochure. Again, if you have to get the right person to give you the right answer, but if we have a handbook, I think that's going to be extremely helpful to move things forward and continue on, because you're always going to have a new business looking to come to town that needs the right answer. I think one of our challenges that I'll definitely share with Phil later is that we have sign companies that come out of the area working in our town that are just popping up signs as well and not following the rules. And I think that we need some clarification with the handbook and having them follow the rules like our local sign companies do. So I think we have a little bit of a hurdle with that as well. So I'm looking forward to helping out with the handbook, working with our local sign companies to help with the clarification on that. And I really appreciate the joint effort that you've allowed us to work with you and make this program work through the years. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Firemen, media folks? Well, we'll close public comment and do thank you for your input. Bring it back to council. And I would like to say again for the whole planning staff, this was a tough one. I remember studying this topic way back when I was on the Economic Vitality Corporation board. We knew we needed to do some changes. We'd talked about it at council meetings in the past. It didn't go too far. And it was really Councilwoman Moreno, being young, naive, bright, and energetic, said, we ought to take a look at this, and was talking with Chamber. And, I have to admit, my first thought was kind of like one of those old guys. Oh, boy, we've tried this before, but it just shows you that, you've got to be consistent and bring it up again. This was a time where our whole community was ready to take this on, and this really did grow out of the business community, and I'm really glad the council did take this on, and I really do appreciate the job staff has done, and I'm going to ask the council to join me in giving Alfredo a hand, because he did a good job, and he learned some stuff on this one. So I think the council is ready. Before we go to a motion, I do want to give, I'm just going to go down the line in case any council member would like to give a clear direction of something you'd like to see that maybe you haven't said or clarify. Staff, did you catch what I said earlier? This is something I really want to see. Go ahead.
Feather science. Everybody seems to be 100% negative about feather science. I think there's a time and place where they are valuable to some company. I know I've driven up and down El Camino a couple times, and there's been a new business that's opened up way in the back of some shopping center. And these feather signs, I could see, new restaurant or new something. I think we could treat them like banners with a 30 or 60 day period. I go to other cities or I drive along the freeway. There's some businesses that have American flag looking feather. it just kind of projects some life. And there's, you know, there's color, there's activity, they're moving. I don't think there's a place for a permanent use for them, but I would hope that maybe staff could look at them and maybe treat them very similar to a temporary banner when a new business opens up or something like that. But that's just my feeling on it.
Thank you. Anything else? Other council members, last thoughts, comments to share with staff? Go ahead. Anyone?
Oh, I just please continue the business partner that the way that you're projecting the city. We are business partners with every business here in the city, and I really that's our heart. I know that we've worked hard to be business friendly. I know that's all of our passion. So I really appreciate the fact that was the way you had that as a business partner with businesses and when we're working with them. So thank you.
I can't let the feather sign go. I'm sorry, Bob. I don't like those feather signs. I don't like the man that's blown up and he wiggles up and down and some of those things that catch your eye. I understand there may be a time or a place, and I know American flags can be used that way if they're huge. There's so many mutations on this that makes it hard to do a sign ordinance. I understand that. I think feather signs look ratty and turn into something that we don't want a Tascadero to be. That's just my opinion.
Well, since you did say it, I have to say that's not my favorite sign either. I do think, though, it is something that gets attention. I don't know if it's something that's doable, but I do think you could have maybe a different standard in the Colony District downtown versus other areas. I would be leaning toward, just like we have a color palette that works in our downtown recommended, though I don't know that anybody follows it particularly. It is good to have some architectural detail and design, and maybe I certainly think like the Caldero font that's been adopted by the city in marketing and promotion. I would consider that, and that could well be handled by maybe conditions within a particular shopping center, but I would certainly say if the downtown area wanted to be firmer on a thought of style, that in the business community came together and said, kind of defined more some classic limitations that applied to Colony District, I would certainly support that. It might be true in other areas that there might be a district that says, well, we'd come together and we'd like to see maybe a message that's communicated. And I would encourage businesses to do that if they wanted to. I think the council really does want to maintain as much freedom and flexibility as we can, but I think safety does have to come first. We did have a lot of problems with the signage actually interfering in walkways. That absolutely can't happen. We'll take that stand. I think also things that are very distracting, that's the danger of you want people to be able to find you and know where you are, but you don't want a distraction either on the traffic area. So I'm satisfied staff are weighing all of the variables, working with the business community, coming up with a good solution, and we'll have discussion before a lot of the details are implemented, and I like that we're going through quite a bit of public process. The whole involvement with the chamber, we had, I think, visited 400-plus businesses. We had over 100 volunteers involved. More of those activities, I'm confident, we're hearing from the community. And I'd like to reiterate just exactly what we're going to be voting on tonight. I believe we are directing staff to go forward with these plans you've presented, as well as the incorporating in any suggestions we've made, and that we are also saying that we will continue this reduced fee rate. And so with that, I'm going to move that we adopt staff's recommendation.
Second.
I have a motion by Mayor O'Malley, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And again, good job, staff. We move on next to council announcements and reports. and then it's followed by a section called committee reports. Sometimes I try to differentiate between the two, though it's difficult. Again, it's a short meeting, and we don't have as many items, so I'm just going to give each council member an opportunity to say what they want on any topic or these items, and I'll just go ahead and I'll just start with Councilman Kelly.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Actually, tomorrow I'm very excited that the Citizens Advisory Board is having a meeting down at the Atascadero State Hospital, and each of us board members were authorized to invite two people to come to the hospital to have a tour, and I think Mayor O'Malley will be down there. And, you know, for the last couple of years, I've lived in town here for 41 years, and I think it took 35 years before I drove down there trying to figure out what goes on in this place down there. And it's truly an amazing place. And as I've sat on the board, I've gotten involved in some of the financial issues of the hospital down there and really how important they are to the community of Atascadero. They employ close to 2,000 people, and their budget's $220 million or something like that a year. I believe 46% of the people live in Atascadero. Recently, we've been talking about creating jobs and creating jobs. I think the unemployment rate from the last records I checked in the United States is 5.2%. San Luis Obispo County is 4.2%. Atascadero is the lowest unemployment rate of 3.2%. We do provide jobs. There's close to 2,000 people that work at the Atascadero State Hospital. I believe they're the second largest employee in the county. Currently, there are over 225 job openings down at the state hospital. And recently I had sat on the Economic Vitality Corporation. The problem with all of these employers is providing housing for these people that want to work here. Now, we're only getting 46% of the people that work down there. We need to get more of those people because most of them are fairly good paying jobs. I mean, they got all the way from the top to the bottom. There's a whole array of different jobs there. You can go down and get a good job without ever going in the place. So tomorrow, I'm very excited that Phil will be able to go down and actually see what goes on in the parking lot, and Linda can go down there in the chamber. And my hope is that we can start working a little closer together. And I think I went to both Linda and Phil today, and I said, would you like a ride? Because I happen to get reserved parking. Otherwise, you're going to be walking about a half a mile to the meeting because the parking lot is so big. So I think you'll really be impressed of what the operation of the hospital is down there, and I really look forward to it, and that we can really go ahead in a more positive manner of the city of Atascadero working hand-in-hand with the state hospital down there.
Report. Very good report. They are a great business partner in our community. Councilman Sturdivant.
No report.
Councilman Fonzie.
Well, I have more of a council concern. I was called and went over to some property over in what I would call as the Perkins area of Atascadero. The streets are named after trees, maple, ash, birch, and so forth. I'm sure planning is aware of this. And someone was installing a manufactured home. This is one of the more affordable areas that we have for affordable housing in Atascadero. And apparently the rules have changed or have morphed into something more than was expected. They bought a lot, took off an old manufactured home, which we have had two fires. They are not safe after a certain year. And when they replaced it with a new one, they're being told they have to put in sidewalks, and it goes all the way around the corner, and they have to underground the utilities, which makes these homes become unaffordable for those who are buying them now. And so I have some concerns about this. I think this is probably a policy item that the city council needs to consider, whether those are the kind of changes we'd like to see in an established area when you put in a new home on an old lot. Because the person that bought this had no idea that they would have these things and don't know how they're going to afford it. And I think this may be something that will come up again and again as the older mobile homes are replaced with newer manufactured homes. So I just wanted to bring that up as a talking point perhaps for another council meeting, that affordable housing is so important. So just as you stated, there's a housing shortage for certain income levels. We don't want to take it away when we already have it. So that was the point of concern. Are we doing our council reports as
you
well?
You can now if you would like.
I'll go ahead. The Air Pollution Control District, we met in a closed session a week and a half ago. The Air Pollution Control Board has to pay $375,000 for attorney's costs for a court case with the Friends of the Oceano Dunes. This will be coming out in the newspaper. A lot of money. In terms of LAFCO, there's an outside user agreement with Monterey County and Santa Barbara County for mosquito abatement. And I think this will be a great help to us in Atascadero with the lake, obviously with Zika virus and other concerns about mosquito-borne things going on. We're going to be able to contract, perhaps, or contract through the county to use their mosquito abatement in the future, which I think will be a big help to us. And LAFCO also heard an item on a new water district that is proposed out near Shannon. It will be called the Estrella Water District. And I'll keep you posted on that one. Obviously, anything dealing with water in the Paso Robles groundwater basin could have effects upon Atascadero, since we may or may not lie within it, depending on how it's adjudicated. That's it for me.
Thank you. I'd like to ask staff, we obviously can't get into much discussion on an item that's not on the agenda. Our city attorney wants to affirm that. Thank you. But what I'd like to suggest is the issue brought up by Councilwoman Fonzie. Would that be something that's addressed in the review of codes that's coming up anytime soon? Or is that something that the council should request maybe a specific discussion? Because I think there is concern about any impact on low-income housing. How would you suggest if we wanted to have some discussion on that?
I should mention that you can certainly talk about an item that you want to bring back and the reasons why.
So let me just ask staff to weigh in. How could we address that question? Will it be addressed in part of another topic in any time soon, or is it something we should go ahead and direct to get on the council as an individual item?
I don't believe that it is part of the zoning code updates and land definitions that we are doing. Certainly we will look at the code and see what the situation is and what triggered these frontage improvements. We are bringing new building codes. Those will be adopted sometime in the fairly new future, but we could bring this individually too. So let us do a little bit of research on that. We hear you and we see the nods that you would like to revisit this, and we'll look into it and figure out the best way to do that, but we will bring it back to council.
Okay, that sounds good, and I think we'll have an opportunity to talk with city manager outside this and let the community understand that any council member can at any time ask that something to be placed on the agenda as a report by that council member, and then we could have more discussion if need be. So if Councilwoman Fonzie wants to do that, if she's not satisfied with staff's direction or follow-up, we could do that. But it sounds like you will have a chance to have some research and some discussion and possibly take action, because I think we are concerned about low-income housing. Is that satisfactory, Councilwoman Fonzie?
Yes.
Okay, any other discussion items? Staff have any other final comments we need to make? Well, then we are adjourned. Thank you.